Welcome to NTD News Today. Here are today's top stories. House Republicans narrowly voted to approve the budget plan to advance President Trump's legislative agenda. The latest from Capitol Hill. The European Union pauses retaliatory tariffs against the U.S. for 90 days. And U.S. inflation declines for the first time since September. More on the better-than-expected inflation report. In response to U.S. tariffs, the Chinese regime takes more action. Now it's restricting one of the U.S.'s most famous imports. Various countries are entering in contact with the U.S. for tariff negotiations. This shortly after the U.S. announced that temporary pause on new tariffs. What the White House says about today's negotiations. Russian-American Ksenia Karolina has been released from a Russian prison. She was serving a 12-year prison sentence after a conviction for treason.
This is NTD News Today, live from our global headquarters in New York City.
Today is Thursday, April 10th. I'm Stephanie Cox. The House today passed a budget plan that lays the groundwork for extending President Trump's legislative agenda.
We've got to lower inflation. We've got to lower interest rates. We've got to get the economy moving again. And all of that happens with this one big, beautiful bill. And of course, none of it starts until we pass the budget, which is why today's vote was so important, which means now the real work begins in the committees. We have 11 committees in the House ready to go to work now. Over the next 2 weeks, as members are in their districts during Easter, the committees will be working and leadership will be meeting between the House and Senate, working with President Trump on the details to start that process the day we get back so that we can deliver real wins for the American people on a bill that makes sure no taxes go up.
The vote was 216 to 214 with two Republicans, Representative Thomas Massey and Rep. Victoria Spars, voting in opposition. The budget resolution passed today amounts to a budget blueprint, which includes few details. The final reconciliation bill cannot pass until both chambers pass an identical budget resolution. The bill would include provisions related to ending restraints on American energy, securing the border, and making the 2017 tax cuts permanent. Johnson said the House and Senate agree on cutting at least $1.5 trillion from the deficit over a decade, while preserving entitlement programs such as Medicaid, which Democrats have said the GOP wants to cut. Johnson postponed a vote last night when some of his Republicans objected that it does not cut spending enough. The House also voted today to pass the Safeguard American Voter Eligibility, or SAVE, Act. If becoming law, it would prevent non-citizens from vote. The European Union is backing off retaliatory tariffs against the United States for now. The European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen announced the 90-day reprieve today after President Trump temporarily lowered duties on imports. She said on X that, quote, if negotiations are not satisfactory, our countermeasures will kick in. An EU spokesperson had this to say.
We are not going to offer any greater detail at this point about what we are or are not saying to the Americans beyond what we have already said. We want to negotiate. We want to talk. We appreciate that you have brought this pause on so-called reciprocal tariffs. And we, in turn, are now pausing our proposed countermeasures in order that we have the maximum space to consult with our member states, consult with our industry, and negotiate with the US. We're ready to make deals. Let's talk.
The EU is due to launch counter-tariffs on about $23 billion of U.S. imports in response to Trump's 25% duties on steel and aluminum. The bloc is still assessing how to respond to American tariffs on cars and the broader 10% levies still in place. U.S. consumer prices unexpectedly fell in March, driven by falling energy prices. The Labor Department's Bureau of Labor Statistics reported the annual inflation rate declined to 2.4%, from 2.8% in February. It's the lowest reading since September. On a monthly basis, the index fell by a better-than-expected 0.1%. The economy added 228,000 jobs in March, while the unemployment rate rose to 4.2% from 4.1% in February. The market opened lower today after yesterday's record rally. The S&P 500 and NASDAQ are down more than 2% in morning trading. The Dow Jones fell more than 700 points. Various countries are contacting the United States for tariff negotiations. This comes after a recently announced temporary pause on new tariffs. White House economic advisor Kevin Hassett says the offers might now be presented to President Trump.
There are maybe 15 countries now that have made explicit offers that we're studying and considering and, you know, deciding whether they're good enough to present to the president.
Hassett says administration officials will meet at the White House later today. They're set to prioritize the most important countries for trade negotiations. This comes after President Trump temporarily lowered tariffs on dozens of countries yesterday. Hassett added that he expects a lot of movement on trade deals in the next 3 or 4 weeks. He says there's a big inventory of deals that are very close to the finish line. China says it will immediately restrict imports of Hollywood films in retaliation for the escalation of U.S. tariffs on Chinese goods. For 3 decades, China has shown 10 Hollywood movies a year, but the revenue model was already not in Hollywood's favor. Chris Fenton wrote the book Feeding the Dragon, Inside the Trillion-Dollar Dilemma Facing Hollywood, the NBA, and the American Business. He said, Hollywood films have accounted for just 5% of the overall box office intake in the Chinese market. On top of that, China taxes those films 50% before any revenue goes back to the U.S. Other foreign markets give Hollywood studios double that amount. On China's all-time box office list, only one foreign film ranks in the top 20, Avengers Endgame, with revenues of nearly $580 million. Australia's prime minister said Australia will not join hands with the Chinese regime when it comes to rejecting U.S. tariffs. He said Australia has its own voice.
Minister, will Australia join hands with China, as the ambassador has suggested, against tariffs?
We engage with all countries, but we stand up for Australia's national interest, and we stand on our own 2 feet. And I have said very clearly, we cooperate with China where we can, we disagree where we must, but we engage in our national interest.
The country's deputy prime minister also weighed in, saying the Australian government is not about to make common cause with China in any contest going on in the world, and that Australia has its own interests and will focus on diversifying its trade relationships. The politicians were responding to the Chinese ambassador to Australia's overture to unite against the U.S. in response to tariffs. Most countries are in the same position as Australia, with a 10% tariff on exports to the U.S., while China now has a 125% tariff. President Trump said the heavy tariff is due to China's lack of respect for the world's markets. Russian-American Ksenia Karolina has been released from a Russian prison. She was serving a 12-year prison sentence. Karolina was found guilty last year of treason by a Russian court for donating $50 to a U.S.-based charity providing humanitarian support to Ukraine. Secretary of State Marco Rubio said on X early this morning that Karolina had been released and was on her way to the United States. He wrote on X, American Ksenia Karolina is on a plane back home to the United States. She was wrongfully detained by Russia for over a year, and President Trump secured her release. He said the president would continue to work for the release of all Americans. Russian state news agencies said Karolina was exchanged for Arthur Petrov, a dual Russian-German citizen. He was being held in the U.S. on charges of criminal offenses related to export control violations, smuggling, wire fraud, and money laundering. The United Arab Emirates Ministry of Foreign Affairs confirmed the exchange happened in Abu Dhabi today. A new set of executive orders from President Trump aim to revitalize the U.S. Navy and make it easier to buy and sell weapons. Here's more on that story.
As competition with China grows, President Trump Wednesday signed an executive order to boost the U.S. shipbuilding industry. In recent years, China rapidly expanded its navy and by 2020 surpassed the U.S. as the largest naval force in the world. According to the Defense Department, the Chinese Navy has more than 370 ships and submarines in service. The U.S. has 297. Trump said Wednesday his administration is going to spend a lot on shipbuilding.
We're way, way, way behind. We used to build a ship a day, and now we don't do a ship a year practically, and we have the capacity to do it.
The new order directs the Secretary of Defense to look for ways to boost private and public investment in shipbuilding. And it isn't just the Navy. Trump's order also seeks to boost the maritime industry more broadly. In addition to building more ships, it will include a boost to U.S. merchant marine training and establish maritime prosperity zones. Or Secretary Sean Duffy said Tuesday this was going to revitalize the industry.
We don't make ships in America anymore, and so he's going to revitalize our shipbuilding industry, make sure we send our great American products around the world on American ships.
In addition, Trump signed executive orders to streamline arms sales and boost arms procurement. One order aims to modernize the acquisition of weapons and systems by updating the procurement structures at the Defense Department.
That process is ridiculous, what they do. They get the highest price and not even good-looking equipment, and we're changing it. We're going to change it to the best.
A third order calls for the Departments of Defense, State, and Commerce to submit a plan for how to improve transparency around arms sales. Trump has repeatedly called on NATO allies to up their defense spending, and this order now directs the DOD and the State Department to create a list of priority partners for future sales.
President Trump was asked yesterday if he had plans to reduce the number of U.S. troops in Europe. Take a listen.
Mr. President, on the subject of U.S. troops stationed in Europe, do you have any plans to reduce the number of U.S. troops in Europe or in other NATO countries?
Well, good. I mean, it depends. We pay for military over in Europe. You know, we don't get reimbursed by much. South Korea, too. So it will be one of the things we discuss that's unrelated to trade, but I think we'll make it part of it because it makes sense. Be nice to wrap it all up in one package for each country.
The Supreme Court temporarily paused two lower court rulings yesterday that blocked President Trump from firing members of independent labor boards. Chief Justice John Roberts acted on behalf of the court to halt the orders made by two Washington-based federal judges. It gives the Supreme Court more time to consider the request for a block while the litigation is ongoing. And a separate appeals court lifted a court order yesterday requiring 20 different federal agencies to reinstate newer workers. A panel of judges at the U.S. Court of Appeals said the judge who entered the order appears to have gone beyond his authority. This clears the way for Trump to continue his mass terminations. Still to come, Harvard University offering a year-long remedial math course targeting a lack of foundational skills that some attribute to the COVID-19 pandemic, while others say the reasons are more nuanced. And the Republican-led House passed a bill that aims to limit district court judges' orders against the Trump administration. Meanwhile, RFK Jr. gives food companies a deadline to eliminate certain food dyes. The Health and Human Services Secretary details a meeting with executives from Kraft Heinz, General Mills, Tyson Foods, Kellogg's, Smucker's, and PepsiCo. Welcome back. Harvard University students who might need some extra help getting up to standard in math can now enroll for a one-year remedial class. It follows years of disrupted learning during the pandemic. But is that all there is to it? Joining us now to discuss is Professor Matthew Garrett, Higher Education Fellow with Campus Reform. Good to have you with us today. The class at Harvard is 5 days a week and covers basic math skills like foundational algebra, which many learn in around the ninth grade. Yet Harvard is an Ivy League school, so what's going on here?
Well, what we are witnessing is a descent into mediocrity by these wonky admission policies that mismatch students that are ill-prepared while overlooking students that are really quite well-prepared. The end result is something quite harmful for all of our students, for those who are excluded, as well as for those who are admitted but not really prepared to succeed in a more elite institution. And we end up as a society losing out on the advanced skills of all of those students who are not properly matched in an institution where they can best excel.
I want to dig into all of those points during this interview, but let's start with the fact that you've said this is actually not an isolated incident either. It's not just at Harvard. We are seeing similar issues across the board. What do you see as the factors at play here?
Well, a lot of this goes back to around 2020, when we had not only the pandemic roaring, but we also had this new anti-racist critical race theory ideology taking over higher education. And as part of that, a lot of institutions, Harvard among them, but quite a few of them actually, removed the SAT and ACT standardized test as a requirement for admission. And what this did is it allowed schools to admit students by other nebulous criteria. Sometimes they called it holistic, or sometimes even they called it race conscious. And this allowed for racial engineering of the campus demographics, irregardless to the preparation of the students or their ability to succeed in those schools. And this is happening all across our system. Now, some schools have backed away from it, but it's still pretty widespread at schools, including the University of Chicago, Princeton, the whole UC system here in California, and quite a few other institutions.
Now, I hear that there are many factors, and of course, the pandemic is part of this story. It did set many students back, even by a year, and many are still trying to catch up. Considering all of the factors and the students that are in there now, could a remedial course be an effective way to get them back on track, in your view?
Yes, a remedial course might be wonderful at a lower tier institution where they are indeed affected by students who are not well prepared. But at Harvard, is a little bit different. And the Ivy League schools, like the University of Chicago, is such an elite institution. These places where they have the privilege of taking our very best. Harvard gets 54,000 applicants every year, and they're going to pick the top 3% of those elite students. And so at those institutions, there's really no excuse to have students who are mismatched and unable to succeed, and forces a lowering of rigor across the board. In addition to that, it really sort of cascades down throughout the entire educational system as the most selective schools start drafting up students who are ill-prepared. It forces lower-tier schools to do the same, and the result is just widespread chaos and mismatching. So while, yes, such a program could be useful at perhaps a small state school where they are genuinely suffering with this issue because pandemic learning loss is a real thing, but it's not an issue for the Ivy League schools. And when they start engaging in these practices, it tells us that something else is going on besides pandemic era learning loss. It's really an ideological and self-imposed problem.
So looking deeper at the issue of admissions standards and the impact there, you've said that removing objective admission standards, as Harvard did with its SAT, ACT requirements during the pandemic, that has the potential to harm all students, including those that were now able to come in this way. Tell me more about that.
Well, there's several studies. There was a great book out of UCLA called Mismatch. There's a study at Duke. There's several studies that have looked at what happens when we place students in an institution where they're not well prepared. And what ends up happening is that those students have a higher dropout rate, or they transfer into less rigorous fields, which ultimately means that we're seeing students moving out of science and STEM and engineering and instead moving into the humanities and into the ethnic studies and depriving the world of a generation of potential scientists that would be valuable for everyone. So it's definitely a disadvantage for those who are admitted beyond their capacity to succeed. And of course, it's a disadvantage for those who are excluded because of these policies.
Now, campus reform has reported that elite schools are beginning to reinstate standardized testing requirements. What are you seeing, and what more, if anything, do you think needs to be done?
Yes, we are seeing a handful of, we're seeing quite a few schools, actually. Princeton, I think, no, not Princeton. There's several institutions, Dartmouth, Caltech, and others that are moving back to admit the ACT and SAT, and that's a wonderful movement. The problem we're facing is that a lot of these elite schools are still refusing to do so. And we have this tool. We have the tool of the SAT and the ACT, which are excellent predictors of success in college. What we need to see is willpower. We need willpower at these elite institutions to use the best tools available so that they can help our students to the best extent possible. We want to place all of our students at the best institution at which they can succeed so they can be prepared and made to reach their potential. And if these institutions are more distracted by equity than excellence and not willing to help our students maximize their potential, I think that we really need to look at their federal funding and determine if that's something that's worth our expenditures.
All right. Thank you so much for your time today and your insights, Professor Matthew Garrett, Higher Education Fellow with Campus Reform. Good to speak with you. And a federal judge yesterday ordered the government to resume refugee admissions and reinstate funding for resettlement agencies. The International Refugee Assistance Project sued the Trump administration. They argued the government's actions violate statutory obligations approved before Trump took office. Immigration rights advocates accused the administration of defying obligations and leaving vulnerable families in limbo. The House yesterday passed a bill to limit the authority of federal district judges to issue orders that apply across the country. This comes in response to the slew of cases filed against the Trump administration. The bill, called the No Rogue Rulings Act, would limit district judges' rulings to the parties involved in the case, rather than broader ones that can block a policy or action from being enforced throughout the country. The bill passed along party lines on a vote of 219 to 213. The act now moves to the Senate for approval, where at least seven Senate Democrats would have to join Republicans to allow it to advance. Prosecutors yesterday moved to drop a gun charge against a man set to be deported to El Salvador. 24-year-old Henry Jose Villatoro Santos is based in Virginia and is accused of being an MS-13 leader. In an unusual move, his lawyer asked a judge to delay ruling on the government's motion for 2 weeks. He said there's a danger if the criminal case is dropped that Villatoro Santos will be deported and jailed in El Salvador without due process. Attorney General Pam Bondi told Fox News, quote, as a terrorist, he will now face the removal process. Four Chinese nationals face deportation after serving their prison sentences for being part of a $1.2 million identity theft scheme. ICE said yesterday that the Chinese nationals had entered the United States on false pretenses. The four defendants were sentenced to prison last month for being part of a complex identity scheme that defrauded national retailers of more than $1 million. Stores included popular beauty shops, Sephora and Ulta, as well as high-end stores such as Saks Fifth Avenue and Nordstrom. China has cooperated in the deportation of its nationals from the United States following a nearly two-year pause. In the past 8 months, the United States has sent five charter flights to China carrying hundreds of Chinese illegal immigrants. Republican Congresswoman Elise Stefanik has a new House leadership role. She announced yesterday that House Speaker Mike Johnson appointed her as chairwoman of House Republican leadership. The position comes with its own staff and budget. Stefanik will also resume her committee assignments on the House Intelligence, Armed Services, and Education and Workforce panels. The announcement comes after President Trump last month withdrew her nomination to become U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations. House Republicans have been searching to find a seat for Stefanik after her former position as conference chair was filled. Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. told CBS he's given food company executives 2 years to remove Red 40 and other artificial dyes from their products. Kennedy detailed a meeting with executives from Kraft Heinz, General Mills, Tyson Foods, Kellogg's, Smucker's, and PepsiCo.
They said it's going to take us a while. For example, the CEO of Pepsi, which owns Doritos, said that in Doritos, you know, people, the consumers like them to be very red, and we have not yet found a vegetable dye that we can match, but we're going to do it. And I said it, they all have to be out within 2 years.
Kennedy cited a, quote, grim inventory of diseases, including cancers and behavioral disease and neurological disease like ADHD, as a reason for the dye ban. Kennedy added during the interview that he would eliminate the generally recognized as safe standard, calling it the biggest villain for food safety. The health secretary last month directed the FDA to explore abolishing the rule, which lets companies include additives in foods without FDA review. In the same interview with CBS, Kennedy encouraged people to get the measles vaccine. He added that he and President Trump agree that people should have the choice and that some will choose not to get vaccinated. An outbreak of measles that started in Texas this year has climbed past 500 cases. Still to come, Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent will visit Argentina next week. The department says the visit is intended to show support for the South American country's economic reforms. Ukraine says more than 150 Chinese nationals are fighting for Russia in Ukraine. We have the update on that. Is the leader of the Chinese Communist Party losing his grip on power? Insider sources and a growing number of articles within China's news circles are hinting at Xi Jinping's declining authority. Those speculations reflected by the disappearance of several of his closest aides inside the Chinese military. But here's the catch. Some of them are the key players in Xi's plan to invade Taiwan. I'm Stephanie Cox, and this is World Watch. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent will meet with Argentinian President Javier Milei and other government and business leaders in Buenos Aires next week. The Treasury Department said the visit is intended to demonstrate support for the country's economic reforms. Bessent's first foreign trip since taking office will come on Monday after the International Monetary Fund is expected to approve a $20 billion loan deal tomorrow. Malay's government is pushing for the IMF to disburse about 40% of the funds up front. The deal is key to Argentina digging itself out of its worst economic crisis in decades. South America's second largest economy is emerging from triple-digit inflation, a recession, and a dangerous slide in foreign currency reserves. Bessent praised the Argentine president's, quote, bold leadership. Meanwhile, Argentina's largest workers' union launched a 24-hour strike today in protest against Milei's sweeping austerity measures. The U.S. and Ukraine continue to hash out the details of a minerals deal between the two nations. Ukraine's deputy prime minister spoke today in Brussels, saying any agreement would have to be consistent with Kyiv's existing commitments.
The technical consultations between the teams from the Justice and Economy Ministries will take place tomorrow in Washington. And I'm not in a position, you know, to reveal any details because the meeting will only take place tomorrow. I will be able to comment tomorrow. But one thing I can confirm for sure that nothing in the agreement can be negotiated with Ukraine in a way that will undermine the existing commitments and obligation Ukraine has, including the financial ones within Ukraine facility, macrofinancial assistance, IMF cooperation.
President Trump is seeking a minerals deal with Ukraine as part of a push to end the war. The president has said he also sees an agreement as a way to recover billions of dollars spent on military assistance to Kyiv. The Trump administration has presented a more expansive draft for the deal, revising its original proposal. Ukraine is home to a range of rare earth minerals, including uranium, lithium, and titanium. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said yesterday that Ukrainian intelligence has identified 155 Chinese citizens fighting for Russia after two Chinese nationals were captured in the country. Zelensky said the Chinese nationals captured in eastern Ukraine are in communication with investigators and are providing information on how they ended up on the front. He said Russia recruited the two Chinese nationals and others through ads on social media. A spokesperson for China's foreign ministry said that the claims were groundless and has continued to deny its involvement in the war. U.S. and Russian delegations hold talks in the Turkish city of Istanbul today. A vehicle carrying the U.S. delegation left the Russian consulate building this afternoon, some 6 hours after they arrived. The focus of the talks is restoring the work of diplomatic missions. The State Department on Tuesday said that Ukraine was, quote, absolutely not on the agenda. Both Moscow and Washington have complained in recent years about the difficulties of getting credentials for their diplomats. Russia has said that even paying diplomats has become difficult due to Western restrictions. U.S. diplomats say their movements are restricted in Russia. Both sides have previously complained of intimidation. Hungary suggested today a biological attack as a possible source of the country's first foot and mouth disease outbreak in more than half a century. It has triggered border closures and the mass slaughter of cattle in the northwest. Last month, Hungary reported a first case of foot and mouth disease in over 50 years on a cattle farm in the northwest near the border with Austria and Slovakia. Prime Minister Viktor Orban's chief of staff said he could not rule out that the virus outbreak was the result of a biological attack without giving information on who might be responsible. He also said that suspicion was based on verbal information received from a foreign laboratory and that their findings have not yet been fully proven and documented. The Thai Prime Minister today said that the tariff pause would give more time to refine their plans before negotiating with the U.S. government. Trump's tariffs included a 36% tax on Thai exports to the U.S. Thailand has said it would increase imports from the United States and lower tariffs as it seeks to negotiate a better deal. Thailand's finance minister said the country has prepared more economic stimulus focused on creating jobs, adding that the 90-day pause on U.S. tariffs announced overnight would give officials more time to prepare a response. And Taiwan's foreign minister said President Trump's 90-day pause on most tariffs gives breathing room for more in-depth talks as well. Taiwan had been due to be hit with a 32% tariff, sending its stock market plummeting, though the key semiconductor industry was excluded. Speaking to reporters at Parliament today, Taiwan's foreign minister said the government was dedicated to increasing its purchases from and investments in the United States and to reduce Taiwan's trade surplus with its most important international backer. British police have arrested the UK head of Greenpeace alongside five other activists after they poured 300 litres of blood-red dye into a pond at the US embassy today. It was in protest against the US sale of arms to Israel. Greenpeace said the UK head of the campaign group, Will McCallum, and others were disguised as delivery riders on bicycles with trailers and tipped the dye into the high-security embassy's semicircular pond. McCallum and the others were arrested on suspicion of conspiracy to cause criminal damage, which carries a maximum sentence of 10 years in prison. As trade tensions escalate between Washington and Beijing, inside China, another battle is quietly broiling. Recently, several close aides to Chinese regime leader Xi Jinping have disappeared from the public eye. It has sparked speculation about whether they have fallen victim to the regime's internal struggles. Experts say, if confirmed, their ouster would sharply reduce Xi's power and impact his plan to invade Taiwan.
For more than a decade, Xi has carefully placed his trusted allies within the Chinese military while removing over 200 generals who were not loyal to him. Another of Xi's ambitions is to take control of self-governed democratic Taiwan, which the CCP has never ruled. U.S. intelligence believes that Xi set a deadline for the invasion, the year 2027. However, something seems to have gone wrong since last summer. A slew of key players that Xi designated to lead his Taiwan invasion have vanished from the public eye or been removed from their positions. Zooming in, the third in command of the Chinese military, He Weidong, has not been spotted in public for almost a month. U.S. intelligence and the Pentagon told the Washington Times that he could be the latest victim of Beijing's purge. Another admiral of Xi's faction, Miao Hua, is under investigation for violating the Communist Party's guidelines. Miao previously helped Xi promote many officials inside the Chinese military. Insider sources say nearly a dozen top Chinese military officials, seen as Xi's closest aides, are being investigated or arrested. NTD cannot independently verify these reports due to Beijing's lack of transparency and its control over the flow of information out of China. But one thing we do know is that these individuals have not been seen in public for a while. So if they were ousted from the CCP's ranks, who's pulling the trigger? Heng He is a China affairs expert who has studied China issues for over three decades. He has testified before the U.S. Congress and the EU Parliament as an expert witness.
The first possibility is that Xi Jinping is purging his own people, but that doesn't make much sense because not everyone in the military is his people. If he starts removing his own loyalists, it would only weaken his influence within the military. So that scenario seems unlikely. However, such purges would still need his approval, which means if this is being forced on him, then the opposing forces must have grown so powerful that he can no longer resist them. So, in my view, it's clear that Xi Jinping's power is now facing significant constraints.
Tang Jingyuan has been a China affair analyst for the Chinese language edition of NTD for years. He, too, suspects that Xi's aides are being targeted by an opposition force inside the CCP, not by Xi himself. Among those reportedly being purged are the commander of the Eastern Theater Command and the commander of the Rocket Force. Both would be key players in a potential Chinese invasion of Taiwan.
When it comes to invading Taiwan, the two most critical military forces Xi relies on are the Eastern Theater Command and the Rocket Force. These are the two foundational forces he values the most. Given the situation, it can only suggest that this is a sweeping purge and act of retaliation orchestrated by his political rivals, directly targeting Xi Jinping.
Insider sources from Beijing's political circle report that the force opposing Xi from within the Communist Party has been spurred to action because of China's sluggish economy and record-high geopolitical tensions.
A former executive at Meta, which owns Facebook and Instagram, says the company undermined U.S. national security to do business in China. NTD's Washington correspondent Jack Bradley has more on yesterday's testimony before the Senate.
When Beijing demanded that Facebook delete the account of a prominent Chinese dissident living on American soil, they did it.
Sarah Wynne Williams, Facebook's former director of global public policy, accused Meta of censoring a Chinese dissident on U.S. soil on behalf of the Chinese Communist Party.
Yet I witnessed Meta work hand in glove with the Chinese Communist Party to construct and test custom-built censorship tools that silenced and censored their critics.
She also says Meta's putting the data of its users at risk.
I watched as executives decided to provide the Chinese Communist Party with access to Meta user data, including that of Americans.
Following the hearing, a Meta spokesperson told me in an email responding to these allegations, quote, Sarah Wynne Williams' testimony is divorced from reality and riddled with false claims. While Mark Zuckerberg himself was public about our interest in offering our services to China, and details were widely reported beginning over a decade ago, the fact is this, we do not operate our services in China today. But Wynne Williams disputes this.
Is that true? Facebook, Meta is not doing business in China. Is that accurate?
That is not accurate, Chairman Hawley. Facebook has a $18.3 billion business in China. And to give just one example, in 2014, it launched Oculus in China with a strategy of playing dumb.
And her allegations are being investigated by the bipartisan group of senators that she's testifying in front of. That's the Senate Judiciary Subcommittee on Crime and Counterterrorism.
That's why this committee has launched a full-scale investigation into the potential illegal behavior of Facebook. Today's hearing is one step in that investigation.
Meta chooses to put human rights concerns aside if it means access to more users, more growth, more dollars.
The senators have requested copies of all communications between Meta and Beijing since 2014, and they hope to get it by April 21st. Reporting by Jack Bradley, NTD News.
Up ahead, President Trump ramping up tariffs on China. What could it mean for you if buying Chinese goods? And China withstand the economic hit? Kevin Hogan breaks down the escalation in a data-driven report.